Hey all, welcome to Geek Freaks. I am Frank, and today I'm joined by Brian Hawkins. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I love having you around. Can you tell us a little bit about Karsis?
Yes. Okay, so Paul Karsis, he is a paranormal investigator, and he's, you know, he's into the occult and everything. In this particular story, where we're being introduced to this main character, finds him in Thompson Pass, Alaska, which is a real place, and it's supposed to be one of the snowiest places on Earth, actually, especially in the United States. And so he's there. He's been hired by a particular person to find a missing relative, and he ends up in the midst of a horrific, brutal killing of the person who hired him. And so he, of course, with the local authorities, is a suspect as being a new person, you know, with the local townies. But there's a darker end, a darker side to everything that's happening that borders and brings on the paranormal, which is his forte. And so while he's also a suspect to authorities, he's investigating, trying to figure out what happened to his client, and if it's connected to the missing relative that he was originally there to find.
What motivated you to write this new book?
So what's interesting about this is this has been in the works for, man, about two, three, pre-pandemic, for sure.
Oh, wow.
I start to lose count with years with the pandemic. So I know it's either post-pandemic or pre-pandemic. And I know that Nathan Kelly and I have been working on this for several years, definitely began pre-pandemic. And it's gone through different phases. At one point, it even had a potential publisher. And, you know, we decided to hang back some, look at the industry. You know, I got really busy with editing, with freelancing, and then with, you know, Scott with Black Cotton, and he was doing Drexler, which eventually landed on Scott as well. And so it was really a fun story to tell. At that point, we edited it, we revised it, and then what ended up happening is, a few months back, several months back, when I was beginning to develop and then go toward branching out and launching Black Trauma, I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, you know, we have like this great paranormal investigator horror story here. Let's do something with it. Here's what I'm planning for Black Trauma. I think that our character will fit perfectly in this horror, you know, universe. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. So that's how Paul Karsis, Karsis as a title, you know, became part of Black Trauma. You know, it's a very strong character. And I thought launching Black Trauma, having this Black character who is a paranormal investigator would be a great start.
Speaking of Black Trauma, you talk about wanting to start this because you wanted to have creative control and independence. Mm-hmm. Why is that so important for a comic creator?
Well, the comic book industry, as much as I've been a part of it, it's always in flux. It's always in flux. And more I find that companies, and again, I say that with recognizing I feel very fortunate to have been a part and contribute all of the work or the company's work that I have. You know, it's helped to grow me, and I've learned so much from so many people. But I feel like a lot of times, more and more, you know, companies, even creator-owned, are becoming IP houses where, you know, they are looking for that next step, the media, like what can I adapt this into, right? And so you end up having, while you're in control of the story, pretty much for the most part, you're not in control of what happens in the real world to your characters, and to your the story that you're trying to tell. And with a higher focus on adaptation, you know, what happens to just the publishing? Right. And at the end of the day, I want to tell these stories. And creator-owned comics offers one of the best avenues and pathways to telling the story that you want to tell. And, you know, if you want to hire on an editor or a proofreader or et cetera, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. But at the end of the day, there's that flexibility, that there's that versatility. After freelancing as much as I have, and, you know, I've always wanted to tell my own stories. Yeah. And so I'm just at a point now where I'm just like, this is the most important thing to me as far as being a creator. So while I love publishing houses, I respect them. I would love to continue to work with them in some capacity. You know, the most important thing is for there to be a vehicle like Black Trauma Productions for me to tell the stories that I want to tell, how I want to tell them, and for them to, for myself and my co-creators, my collaborators, to be able to control the story, control the characters, control the narrative, and to control the IP.
Very well said.
To be adapted, or if it's not even now.
But that could be the focus, or that could not be the focus. It's up to you this time, not outside sources. Yeah. Speaking of your past work, we have The Vineyard, Nottingham, and Black Cotton. What have you learned from those projects that you get to bring forward to Carsis?
So, oh man, a lot. let me start with Mad Cave, where Mad Cave, you know, they were going into the direct market through Diamond and beyond as the editor. And the first title that they were releasing was Battle Cat. And so, you know, I had the wondrous opportunity, like the great, incredible opportunity to work closely with Mark London and Chris Fernandez, who is now the publisher, and editing that book. And, you know, and since then, of course, Mad Cave has grown. And one of the things that they allowed me to be a part of was their talent search. And the talent search brought forth eventually David Hausen and Shane Volk, who brought us, you know, Nottingham. And so I remember reading the script, the very first script. And I remember like just like, oh, another Robin Hood story. Okay, let me read this. And so I got to the sixth page, and I believe I told the story the exact same way. It was the sixth page. And I remember I paused and I was like, oh, wait a second. This isn't Robin's story. This is the sheriff. And it's something so simple that flipped that we're like, oh my God, yes. And from that moment on, I was in love as an editor, as a fan. And what Mad Cave, you know, through the Nottingham process, through all the process with all the different comics, you know, they helped to grow me. I got to see firsthand their professionalism, the challenge of making sure that these scripts were up to par, that the scripts like would go to the artist, you know, in the best version possible. And that's not to say that I had to do a whole lot too, because there were some phenomenal writers. And so I got to one of the biggest things. I read a Mark Waid article, and it talked about, and it really affected me as an editor and a writer. It talked about the service of an editor is to serve the voice of the characters in the story and to support the writer script wise. And I really took that to heart. And so it really taught me to take a step back as a writer, as a creator, and to understand my role and to see the story for what it's supposed to be outside of myself, not try to make the story what I think it should be. And that has really helped in how I write and how I look at story, the craft of storytelling in general. where I understand that, you know, I play a very specific role that is limited and not in this power in not overstepping that. Yeah. And I've kind of taken that into everything that I write and create and what I do in freelance. So when it comes to Black Cotton, as a writer, I end up, I try to take a step back from the story and allow the story to be what it's supposed to be, even outside of me, you know, writing the story, you know, and listening to my co-writer, Patrick, having a conversation with him. With The Vineyard, it was the same way, you know. I'm working with some uber professionals here and, you know, listening to, at the time, Mike Marks and Ryan Carroll and Teddy, you know, and we're, while I have all this freedom to create, you know, the nuances of how to construct this story to fit what audience I want is there. So I'm constantly being a learner. And I guess that's where I'm going with this, is being a learner while being a creator is very important. You can't feel or believe that you have arrived at anything. You know, you're always learning.
What a skill too. Actually, that might lean into you being a teacher as well. Like, that's such a skill that so many, you know, they think they know what they're doing now and they might learn something by accident and take those hard knocks. But to understand that you're going to learn something is a whole new skill. That's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Cool.
So we're going to be following Paul Karsis into the frozen north of Alaska. What made you think Thompson Pass? Why did you choose this setting?
So when Nathan and I was talking about it, like, it's funny because we both had our hearts set on snow. So for some reason, like, especially with a horror story, a frigid, cold place, snowy place, just feels like that perfect horror setting, right? Like, I would love to see a Scream movie in the snow. I'm hoping that Scream 7.
That would be cool.
Like in the snow during Christmas time or something, right? Like that, you know, that cold setting lends very well towards horror and you know, the darkness, you know, what lurks in the darkness, the eeriness. So once we decided snow is it for our setting, we kind of Googled and researched, like, you know, where are the snowiest places at? And we wanted to be set in America. So, you know, Thompson Pass came up and, you know, we looked at pictures and we read about Thompson Pass. And so we were like, yo, like, we don't want him to live in Alaska, but, like, think about this character that's out of place, that's planted right in a snowy, cold place. You know, the thing itself becomes a character. And that's what we wanted.
Yeah, I never thought about how the snowy aspect and stuff like that really adds to the horror vibe. I'm thinking right away, blood really pops off of the snow color too. Like that red off the white, like that would look so good. Just a splash of blood. Like, ooh, catch that really good.
When you're
diving into writing a comic, this one or others, what is some of the processes you go through? Like from initial concept into it's on the page.
So I have notebooks. I have a bunch of notebooks that I already jot ideas down. Those ideas eventually translate into, I love Google Drive, so I have a bunch of Google Docs, a bunch of folders. And so from the notebooks, we go into the Drive and then into the Docs, and I begin to organize it in the form of like doing like a log line, then doing a story / synopsis, in prose, basically. From that prose doc, it becomes a, I create a new doc, a outline doc, where I'm either outlining it in the form of like an actual breakdown where it shows page one, page two, page three, or page one through four, or like act one, and then I have like beats, and act two beats, act three beats. So it becomes like an outline. From the outline, I then go into scripting. And the script, again, I'm a firm believer that story have a life of their own. So I'm always open to the fact that this script might not be the exact replica of what that outline is. That outline is just a blueprint, It's a starting point. But when you get into script, that story has a life. The characters have a life. The characters have a voice. And sometimes you have to go with what that story is saying to do, as opposed to what you want it to do. So I try to intuitively leave room for that adjustment.
That's my next question for you right there, actually, is how often do you think you're changing the story or Paul based off of how he's starting to breathe and come to life on the page?
I really think it's probably about a, if I'm going percentage wise, I would say that this probably, the structure, the pacing of the story, I think pretty much usually remains the same, the pacing and the structure. Okay. But I think what happens, I might really go 60-40, the outline remains, the 40% wow. might change. It's very close to being even. It's close to being balanced.
Is that a fun process for you then? Kind of discovering the story you didn't know you started off writing?
Absolutely. That's one of the best things. I think it's one of the best things. That's a great question. I'm not sure if I ever been asked that question, but yes, that's one of the best things. I'm a big reader, big TV, big movie guy. And so, you know, I love the reveal. I love how a story unfolds. And so I think that's probably one of the things that I love most about writing is that while, even though I might know where I want the story to go, it's the journey that I'm on as the creative writer that new things are revealed to me as well. Yeah. So
there's a part of you telling us a story. It's also a part of you guys, like you saying, hey, come check this thing out real quick. You got to see this, and guiding us along as you're finding it out just ahead of us. Kind of a, it reminds me of like that substitute teacher move where they like read the book right before class. And then all of a sudden they know what's going on right before the students do.
that's it right there. I love that analogy. That's it right there.
Now, I'm assuming this is number one of many. We're talking about how the story changes and develops as you're. I'm sure you have that kind of end goal, what you want for the story. Mm-hmm. Are you like, that's hard set, or are you willing to adapt?
I'm willing to adapt. I'm not hard set. And I feel like I have, for the most part, always been that way. Again, it's just something with me in the life of stories. I really do like, it might sound weird, but I feel like I have to honor, you know, that the story has a life. An example that kind of reaffirms this is I read an article about a long time ago about J.K. Rowling and how she said that the story was telling her that Hermione and Harry should end up together. But she had already done the outline. And so she said she forced the story to go the way that it did because this was her original plan. Hindsight, she said, listening to the story. And that kind of reaffirmed how I feel about like, yeah, because as a fan of that series and as a creator and writer, I'm looking at the movies. I remember reading a book and I remember saying, oh my God, I know where this is going. Like, I felt it going in that direction where Ron was going to go dark and Hermione and Harry was going up together. I felt it like that's, wow, like, yes, that's where this is going. Yeah. And I wanted it. And then all of a sudden, it didn't happen. And I felt slighted. I'm like, ooh, wait a second. What? He came back? No, we're not supposed to come back. Everything has led up to this breaking this friendship. And it's supposed to be a tragic break. And it's supposed to be this tragic final reunion. And you fix it within three chapters.
Right.
Fix it within three chapters. And so once he said that, it kind of gelled with how I felt. I'm like, yeah, I see exactly what you're talking about. That is completely forced. The story dictated this, but you wanted that. So
Brian, you're slightly blowing my mind here, because now I'm thinking, like, yeah, the story is writing itself there. It would have been so easy to have that tragic story, the fallen brother, redemption at the last moment, Darth Vader-esque moment. I mean, it would have been so easy to go, and it would have been clean. Dang, now I'm a little bit mind blown. We're trying to figure out how to do like a follow-up right? to this. We can't because the story's flawed. Oh my God. I did think we were going Harry Potter, but we went in Harry Potter anyways. That works for me.
There we go. Love HP.
Well, you've been on this journey for a while now. I want to ask you, especially as somebody who's trying to share your knowledge with others, what is some advice you might give to somebody else who has that idea knocking around in their head? What's some advice you might have?
First thing, write it down. And write it down not in the sense of like it has to look a certain kind of way. Hmm. Write it down. It does not have to be clean, sure. It just has to be your raw thoughts. Once those raw thoughts get down on paper, you know, you can begin to like pick them apart, do something with them, connect the dots. A lot of times I feel like writers and creators, like we get an idea that things have to look or be a certain way in order for them to come to life or to be produced or for them to be anything. And that's not true. You know, our thoughts are vast. And so, you know, getting those thoughts into book form is a streamlining process anyway. So whatever form you have to do to begin that process, just take it and allow yourself the ability for it not to be perfect. Yeah. It's okay that it's not perfect. It's not supposed to be. So that's one of the major first steps, I think. It's just get it down on paper, allow yourself to take that first step into the journey.
And it kind of goes back to what you're saying before, where just put it out there and then let it kind of choose which way it needs to go. Don't try to force it into something that you might've been inspired by, or try to stay away from that inspiration. Just let it get out on paper. That way it could start forming its own life. That's really good advice.
Absolutely.
Brian, where can people go to start getting their copy of Carsis?
Kickstarter, which is really the direct market for indie comics, I think.
It is now, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, such a great platform. We're on Kickstarter. We have about 8 days, I believe, left on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So if you type in or you search Carsis, it should come up. If you type in Brian Hawkins, it should come up. So Kickstarter is the place.
Place to go. We're gonna have all the links in the description, guys. So right now, get down there, start clicking away, follow up, and just follow Carsis, follow Brian on his journey. What is the best social media platform you're on, Brian, so people can follow you there too?
Oh, so I'm on X, which was formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with that. Threads, yeah, I'm at Threads, there we go.
Pretty much if you type in Brian Hawkins Writes, you'll find me.
I'm going to have all those links in the description as well, guys, so you guys can go ahead and start following up on those. I'm going to end with one thing. This is kind of somebody who I frequent Kickstarter, and I will say, this is a really good sign as somebody who's a responsible Kickstarter user. 606 backed. That's the most backed I've seen on anybody. That's impressive as heck, man. Oh, that's small flex right there. That's pretty good. That's a user.
Man. Yeah.
All right, guys. Please, I want you to check out Carsis right now. Good. Check out Brian Hawkins' work. Brian, thank you so much for joining me today, man.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast. I've enjoyed it so much. Great questions, great conversation. Real cool, man. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, guys. We will see you next week. Make sure you follow everything in the description. Bye.